Thank you for joining us here at Christ Fellowship for our online message podcast.
Well, good morning. For those who don't know me, I'm Chris Ball, the multimedia director here, and it's a privilege to be here this morning and appreciate the opportunity, Derek. And so here we are. We're finding ourselves transitioning seasons right now. I mean, we've heard a lot about Thanksgiving, but now we're transitioning over. I mean, we already see the Christmas lights up. But there's very defining characteristics to each of these seasons. Just even thinking about the season that we came from, fall. It's the changing of the leaves, the colors, and pumpkins, and Thanksgiving. And here we are transitioning into the holiday season of Christmas, and we have the snow, the lights, the ornaments, and everything that defines that season. And I was just thinking how true that is about our lives as well, how different seasons that we find ourselves in have these defining characteristics to them. And so the season of life I find myself in right now is parenting. And a defining characteristic of having two little boys, a three-year-old and a two-year-old, is discipline. It just seems like our life evolves around discipline right now. And so around this whole parenting theme, a lot of days I just don't feel like I know what I'm doing. And so I actually had to look up the word parenting to see if it even, what I was doing, matched the actual textbook definition of it. And in looking at that definition, one of the words that popped out to me was child rearing. And my mind immediately had flashbacks to when I was a child, rearing had a whole different connotation for me. And I got my fair share, let me tell you. But rearing, the definition is to raise up and to grow to fullness. And so really as a parent, that's what you'd hope, that one day when they leave your house, that they have been raised up, that they're not lacking anything, they have all their limbs, all their parts, and they are complete and they're fully equipped for life and to be successful in life. And so as a parent, especially now in the age of the kids that I have, being that young, it's almost like the trees, when they're real young, you might see them with ropes tied to them. It's because when they're that young, they're real vulnerable and they don't really know what's right and what's wrong. And so they need some tension on them in order for us to be able to raise them up and really set that foundation that they can grow straight forward in life. And if you really think about it, in this world, there's very little things that naturally just grow straight. And I know something I've witnessed at our house is my wife, she has naturally wavy hair. But if she wants her hair to be straight, she locks herself into the bathroom and she takes this metal thing and plugs it up to electricity. You know it's intense if there's going to be electricity involved. And she heats it up to this crazy heat and then subjects her hair to this. And it's a process that it's best to leave her alone, and she comes out and looks amazing. But sometimes it takes that intense process to straighten it out because it's not natural for that. And right now, an example that's very near and dear to my heart is we're in the middle of home renovations. And so you need things to be straight for it to be structurally sound. So I'll go out to the lumber store, and how hard is it to find a straight piece of wood? I can be in there for an hour pulling them out and pull out the whole bend, and you look down and it's so hard to find one that's just naturally straight. And so I take it and I bring it home and I get out the hammer and nails and we straighten it out. But sometimes it takes an intense process to do that. And so we learn about in scriptures, you hear this term about God is in the process of making us holy. And really that's something that he's doing in our lives, because we naturally in this world, we're bending and we're going every which way as people. And so for him to actually come into our lives and give us this vision of what actually is straight and begin to lead us in that and to begin to father us like that, we can become holy. And it's a holy life becomes the greatest tangible proof of the existence of God. Just think about that. To see somebody and to see a transformation in their life, just think of who you were before you really begin inviting and calling on God in your life. And just that you never really seemed to even know what the standard was. But then look at your life after God's involvement and to see, it's like, wow, it just made all the difference in the world. It's because God was fathering us and working out that and leading us in this holy life. And you see this difference that God is working out in our lives? He's doing that through discipline. And discipline is a main, just like I would do as a father, God is doing that with us. And he's setting and he's tension in our lives that's going to keep us going straight and living in the identities that he has for us, that he's mapped out. And I think just to hear the word discipline, our minds automatically go to this, real intense place. You automatically think of punishment and somebody just towering over you and holding you in. And so I really want to just clarify what I'm talking about when I'm mentioning discipline and God disciplining specifically. I think it serves more as a guardrail than it does a gate. Because you think a guardrail was meant to keep you moving forward along a path and actually getting you to your destination safely without ruining yourself along the way. Where a gate is more restrictive, it's meant to keep you in. And really God and the type of father that he is and the type of discipline that he uses with us is one that's, it's moving us forward, it's actionable, it's going on, it's empowering. And so today we're gonna be looking at a story from 2 Samuel 11 through 12. And in the story, we're following King David, and he's a man that we hear a lot about all the praiseworthy qualities of him. You know, a man that really looked to God and said, hey, I want you to father my life. And we see that his life had incredible, unprecedented favor and blessing. But today, I want to look specifically at a time when he had drifted off, and he jumped over the guardrail and started saying, you know what, I don't really want to be led by you anymore. And we see how God steps in and really intervenes when all this is going down. And so this is a bit of a lengthy reading, so I'm going to do my best to just kind of hit the high notes of it and paint the picture of what is going on in 2 Samuel 11 and 12. And so really, the subject matter and the setting of this, it's based around this nation of Israel. And Israel, the significance of that is God had this vision for this nation of saying, I'm going to be the father of this nation. I'm going to give them laws that are really going to set them apart, and I'm going to father them and discipline them in such a way that they're going to stand out, so much so that all the nations of the earth will look at Israel and say, wow, there's no other nation that is as blessed. There's no other nation that loves like Israel or as generous as Israel, and they're going to stand out, and all the other nations will gather. It's a light. It will serve as a light to this world. And so it's this nation that God was setting as the standard, as what is straight, that this King David was a king now. And really, a lot of his success was because he looked to God for the strategy for success. And we see that time and time again. But here, this is no longer the case when we jump into this story. And it really starts off by saying, in the spring of the year, in a time when kings go off to war, David sent his army to go, yet he remained in Jerusalem. You see, as a king, you have responsibilities and you have things that you're supposed to be doing. And then it was all about going out and protecting the land that you already had and also like multiplying and expanding that. And for him to say, no, actually, I'm not going to do that right now. I want to stay back in my palace where it's comfortable and just send everybody else to do that. We see he's already making decisions that are separating himself from the calling that he had and even the responsibility that he had in that calling. And so where he's neglecting his responsibilities here, we pick up on the story where one evening, David, he's just strolling on the rooftop of his palace, just hanging out. And really, I like the translation where it said strolling because you get this illusion of like leisurely walking, free of responsibility. You know, even though everybody's fighting off a distance, I have just aimless wandering. And it's here in this place of aimless wandering, free of responsibility, that he comes across a sight which would stop anybody dead in their tracks. He comes across this beautiful bathing woman. And the problem isn't that he saw that or even came across that, but the problem emerges in what you do with that. You know, because he knows that it's probably not right for me just to stay here and stare at this. I should probably move on. But we find in the story that's not the case. That, here with all the free time he had, this was the best thing going on the palace roof. You know, and so he kicks back, maybe orders a drink, I don't know, and takes in the sights. And it's in this place of lingering and lingering on what he saw that it moved from just an innocent stumbling upon and moved into a place of lust, where it wasn't just taking in these images anymore, but it became something where those images started to scroll in his mind. But now it was him and her together in his mind, and he said, okay, I really don't have plans tonight, so you know, maybe something can become of this. And so how true is it that when we move to this place of fantasy and allow our minds just to well up there, that we soon move to a place of action, where it doesn't stay in our mind, but it actually becomes actionable. And so he actually sent for a messenger, said, hey, I want you to go find out about this lady down here. Let's see what's going on with her. And so the messenger comes back and says, actually, this is Bathsheba, it's her name, and she's the wife of Uriah the Hittite. He's one of the soldiers that's actually off fighting right now. So David, he's married. She's a wife of somebody. Just want to let you know that. And really, you got to think, David was a man who knew God's law. He knew what was right, and he knew what was wrong, and so he knew that adultery was wrong. And so even the mention of the messenger saying, hey, wife, you automatically would think that he would just say, you know what, this is wrong, I need to check out right now. But the thing is, in the absence of light, the lines blur between what is right and wrong. And you gotta think, God's word is a light unto our path and a lamp unto our feet, and so a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our path. And so the further he started making these choices, getting away from what was he knew to be the truth and what to be light, things started getting blurry. And what should have been an easy choice wasn't anymore. And now emotions and desire were the main driving forces. And so David sends his messenger back and says, I want you to go get her and let's bring her up to the palace tonight. And so maybe he gets his harpist to play a little bit of Barry White music or whatever. They don't fill in the details of what happened there, but they got together that night and she went on her way. And it wasn't too much longer later since that encounter that David gets word that, hey, actually, you're going to be a dad. There's something that happened that is going to be a lasting consequence from this moment of pleasure. And once again, this is another moment where you think, man, I've blown it. Things have spiraled out of control beyond what I could have imagined, and very quickly, and now there's a child in the mix. I need to run back to God, knowing that God is one who can restore and can somehow bring good from this and forgive. Yet, like I said, the further that we bend away, the more the lines get blurred. And so rather than seeking God out, David began saying, you know what? I got myself into this mess, and it's up to me to fix it. So what do? He does what a lot of us do. We cover it up. How do we make this thing go away? And so David sends for Uriah, brings him back from the war, and sits down with him, and you know, probably acting like he's his friend, just saying, hey, Uriah, you know, it's a great job you fighting out there doing the battle thing. Let me just treat you. Why don't you just take the night off, go home with your wife, you know, enjoy some time together, and just have the evening. But Uriah didn't do that. He slept outside. And the next day, David finds out about this and brings Uriah back and says, why didn't you go home? Haven't you been at war? Why don't you go and lie with your wife and enjoy this opportunity that I'm giving you now? But the thing is, even though David had walked away from his calling, Uriah hadn't. And he was still a man of integrity. And for him to still knowing that people were off fighting and the nation was still at war, for him to go indulge on a night of pleasure, he felt just wasn't right. His integrity wouldn't let him do that. And so he said, no. Even if you're giving me this command, I cannot do this because it's not right. And so he slept outside again. And so David, knowing that he couldn't compromise his integrity sober, says, hey, maybe we get a few drinks in him. Let's just see how that changes things. So he invites Uriah back over and gets him drunk. But still, Uriah knew who he was, and he wasn't going to compromise on his integrity. And so he still didn't go home. And so at this point, if he can't fix and he can't cover up Uriah, because, you know, the hope was that Uriah would go home, lay with his wife, and then everybody would just assume it was him that got her pregnant. But that's not in the equation anymore. And so at this point, David says, okay, I must destroy the evidence. And so he sends orders for Uriah to go to the front line, to the fiercest fighting. And he says, okay, when Uriah's up there, I want you guys just to back off and let him be just overcome by the enemy, and then report back to me when he's dead. And sure enough, David received word of Uriah's death. And so in verse 26 here, we just sum this up with, when the wife of Uriah heard that Uriah, her husband, was dead, she lamented over her husband. And when the mourning was over, David sent and brought her to his house, and she became his wife and bore him a son. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. And as I'm reading through this story, I'm amazed at how quickly this thing just escalated out of control. I mean, the guy's just, he's laying out of his job. I mean, I don't want to be king right now. I want to hang in the palace. And then cruising on the rooftop. You know, it was very innocent things, but then it so quickly spiraled to adultery and to murder. And you see that the further we get away from what is right, the easier it is to exponentially make bad decisions left without correction. I mean, just think of a curved piece of wood. The further it gets off from what is straight, it exponentially curves away. And really, without correction, that's how it is with us as well in our actions. We need that intervention. So speaking of intervention, where was God in all this? Isn't he supposed to be the father of Israel, the one that's keeping them straight and moving forward in their identities and in who they're supposed to be, this light for the nations? Where is he? He didn't show up anywhere in all this story through each further down spiral of this. The reality is, it wasn't that God wasn't speaking, because God speaks through his word. He speaks through people. He speaks through his Holy Spirit, and he speaks through circumstances. But you can't lead somebody that's not willing to listen. And so even the messenger coming and saying, wife, that should have been, no, I don't want to listen to you. I'm closed off to hearing from you. David was blazing his own trail and had no intention of listening to God. And so we don't see God in the story. And so at this point, David is really attempting to move on. Uriah is dead. He has, his wife is now his wife, and a child is now in the picture. And really, David was real cunning about how he did everything. Sending a messenger, doing it in the night, and then the way he was interacting with Uriah as well. It was all done in secret, so nobody knew. The gossip hadn't spread, and so he still had his reputation intact. And so he was just gonna go on with life. But the reality is that God saw. And God saw what happened in the secret. The same that goes for us as well. He sees what we do in the secret. And he intervened. He said, you know, we can't have this. And so we read next in there that God sends a prophet to David. I'm just going to tell you, if God has to send a prophet to you, you've probably screwed up pretty bad. And so you don't want that to happen. And so we read here of what this prophet says to David. And the Lord sent Nathan to David. He came to him and said to him, there were two men in a certain city, one rich and the other poor. The rich man had very few flocks and herds, but the poor man, he had very many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing but one ewe lamb, which he had bought. And he brought it up, and he grew it up with him and his children, and used to eat of his morsel and a drink of his cup and lie in his arms. It was like a daughter to him. Now there came a traveler to the rich man, and he was unwilling to take one of his flock and prepare it for the guest who had come. But he took the poor man's lamb and prepared it for the man who had come. Then David burned with anger against this man, and he said to Nathan, as the Lord lives, this man deserves to die, and he shall restore the lamb fourfold because he has done this thing and he's had no pity. So David is fired up. But Nathan said to David, you are that man, and turns it around. And really, through the story, it was a way in which, you know, David just wasn't seeing just how the sin in his life was affecting those around him. And through the story, for the first time, it was just like the bubble had burst, and he saw, wow, I've been heartless, and I've been selfish. And it was in this moment of seeing clearly that the prophet continues and says, and this is what the Lord God of Israel says, I anointed you king of Israel, I protected you, and I gave you victory. I gave you wealth, and I gave you wives, and everything that you would have wanted, I'd blessed you with, and I've given you. You've lacked nothing, but that still wasn't enough. You wanted more. You despised my word. You killed Uriah, and you took his wife. And so God was very blunt about, this is what you've done that is way out of line from what is right of my people. And really, the defining moment of this is what happens next. Because you see, our response to God's discipline determines our destiny. And so in this realization of the sin that David had before God, he realized his need to return to his father. Because you see, on his own and doing life on his own, it brought about a lot of pain. And really, there's nothing to show for that pain, and really no hope in that pain. But under God's discipline and the life that he had with him, there's still pain, the pain of steering him along. But God, in doing that, in God's discipline, it always produces something good in our lives. And so it brought back, even hearing God say, I anointed you king over Israel. He was just thinking back, saying, wow, when I allowed God to father my life, he led me to this place that nobody else has, this distinguished position of king that otherwise wouldn't have been possible without God leading him there. And as we read further on in the scriptures, we see that God really did begin working and restoring David's life beyond this and disciplining him. You see, in Hebrews we read, my son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines the one he loves, and he chastens everyone he accepts as his son. You see, discipline affirms our identity. When we come under the fathership of God and he begins steering us along and adding tension to our lives, he's doing that because he cares about us, and he sees who we can become, and he wants us living in the identity that is full of blessing and favor, and that otherwise we could not have that life apart from his intervention. You know, and this is history of the Bible, of David's story, but as I was studying this, I became pretty humble very quick, and just realizing that this isn't just David's story, but this is very connected with my story as well. You know, I haven't always had the life that I have right now. And even looking back to my late high school years and early college years, I very much was in that same place of jumping over the guardrail and just saying, you know what? I just want to aimlessly wander around and find whatever thrills can come my way. And I want to do this on my own. And oddly enough, when you start taking that approach, it doesn't take too long for thrills to come your way. You'll find exactly what you're looking for. And for me, it didn't really come in the form of a rooftop stroll. I mean, roofs our days aren't really conducive for prancing around on. But mine came in the form of online and just thinking and just coming across images. And rather than running from what I knew was right, I lingered like him. I pulled up a chair, I sat a while and wanted to see where that would go. And it was in this place of lingering, and then the lusting, and then the fantasy of the mind that took place. I mean, just think, it's like a pot left on the stove with a cover. There's only so much of that desire that gets boiling up before it has to start coming out. And so that it didn't stay just on a computer, and it really led me to a place of saying, how can I satisfy these desires outside of here? You know, and that led me to a place of getting in a relationship that was more a casual arrangement, you know, based on a mutual lust, I'd say. And it was in this relationship that it wasn't too long off that there became a scare that there could be a child from this relationship. And in the same way, there was this very just clear and very sobering, whatever fantasy bubble that was there before was now gone. And there was very real consequences of what life very well should be like from this path that I've taken. And really, just looking, I could see nothing good moving forward. And apart from God's intervention, I didn't know what life would be. But I did know that there was a time when God said that he would be my father and that he would lead me. And so it was really through those circumstances where I was like, you know what, God, just like David, there's a lot of pain right now and there's a lot of things that I've just messed this up. I would much rather come under your discipline and just hope that you'd be able to take me back and do something with this life that I've messed up to lead me to a restored life and to a life where someday I could have a child that wasn't surrounded with so much uncertainty, and to have a wife and a marriage that just wasn't formed in a place of secrecy first. And only God could have done that. And thankfully, just like David, God was there. You know, the moment that I looked back to him and asked him to father my life. And it wasn't a quick fix. It wasn't something that it was one and done into the story. But it was something, just allowing God to be able to take over and lead my life. He started working on me. And there was a lot of pain in those initial stages of getting me back where I was so far off. But he did that. He engaged in that work with me. And now, for a lot of you, you know, you've seen me out here at the church, and you would have no idea that I have gone through times like that in my life, but that's just the work of God. That's what God does, and that is that proof, the tangible proof of the existence of God when we see that lived out and what he does in people's life when they give it to him. And so in closing, the reality is we all drift. David, a man after God's own heart, we saw how far he drifted. I've drifted. You've drifted. You may be drifting right now. That's where you're at. It happens. But the reality is we don't have to wait till everything careens over the side of the cliff and explodes on the bottom for us to get well and to get back on track. You see, like I said, the word is a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our path. And so God has actually given us his word that we can get in there. And if we're open to listen, if we're open to hear and ask God to lead us there, he'll begin speaking and showing us where we're out of alignment. And we can self-correct now. We don't have to let it get worse. And I know for myself, when I was going back under God's fathership, that was instrumental in those early days and still is now of keeping me in line with the purposes that he has for our lives and moving forward in our identity. Well, maybe you're just wandering aimlessly right now. You've kind of separated yourself from a purpose and you feel like you don't have a purpose right now. Get a purpose. Engage. Approach God and say, I'm available. Show me. Give me something I can connect with. Because for me too, in that early stage, I needed something to occupy my time and to engage in. And I remember just saying, God, I'm open. Just what do you have for me? And really through a crazy turn of events, somebody from the church had actually said, hey, Chris, why don't you come work with the youth? And I'm thinking, you got a bad judge of character. You probably shouldn't, like, I'm probably not the one you should have working with youth right now. I got a lot of issues. But the reality is that there was a place for me here and there was an opportunity to get engaged should I have been willing. You know, God will give you a purpose. You just got to ask him and you got to look for it. Well, maybe you're in a place of the temptation has already started. You're already looking at things you shouldn't. The mind, the fantasy of the mind is already in full steam. And really, it's all about not just running from, but it's what are you running to? And I know for me, just in that early stages as well, I just had to develop the habit of saying, you know what, if I'm online, if I even see anything that could be remotely tempting, close. Just gotta close it right away. Before I even can think, before you can even get in my mind, I just need to close. I need to run from. But I also need to run to
something that is actually going to fulfill me and that actually is going to lead me forward into something that is better. But maybe you're in a place where you've already messed up. It's kind of too late. You've allowed that desire to overflow, and in whatever it may be, you've done it. There's the consequences that are looming, and here you are, and you said, I've gotten myself into this, and I need to get myself out. And the truth is that you don't. We got a good father, and good fathers clean up messes they didn't make. And that's the truth, that when we come to God with our brokenness and just the messes that we make out of our life, where we jumped over what we knew was right, our good father who loves us is there and says, you know what? Let's work on this. I'll clean this up in a way that you couldn't. And let's just continue moving forward. Come under my discipline and let's move forward. And the pain of my discipline, it may hurt, but you'll have something to show for it. The pain outside of that, you have nothing to show for that. But it really boils down to this, is our response to God's discipline will determine our destiny. How are you going to respond? And we find that in Psalms 51, we catch a glimpse of David's response and really what led to the transformation of getting him out of that mess. And it started with a simple prayer where he just approached God humbly, not making any excuses for the sin, but owning it and saying, I messed up. God, I lay this before you, knowing that I've done this before you and only you. And he asked and he said, God, create in me a pure heart and renew a steadfast spirit within me. And do not cast me from your presence or take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore me to the joy of your salvation and grant me a willing spirit to sustain me. And it goes on, but this prayer for God to come in and renew his heart and to lead him back and to make what is dirty clean. And God did, and he's done it in my life. And that's the same thing that he wants to do in our life, that we would come to him and allow him to be that loving father, that we'd sit under his discipline and we would start tapping into the lives that he sees for us, that we don't even know could exist for ourselves. The blessing, the depths of love, the depths of intimacy that we otherwise couldn't achieve. He's a good father. And so my challenge for you this week would be, just get alone and read Psalms 51 and see where you sit into that story, where you fit into that story. And know that's a good starting place, just to open up that dialogue with God and just see where it goes and respond to him.